Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Lounge Radio Show, where we expose the myths of entrepreneurship and release the weight of it all. Real people, real issues, and real talk with expert solutions. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show as we welcome our host, Alicia Brown, the Joy Guru.
And thank you for tuning in to another exciting episode of the Entrepreneur's Lounge radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Alicia Brown. I have a special guest in the co-host seat that I will introduce to you shortly. With the current state of the nation with coronavirus or COVID-19, normalcy has been disrupted. And there are certain populations that suffer a greater risk than others. They're often right here in our backyard, but they don't receive as much coverage in the media for help and assistance. So we here at the Entrepreneur's Lounge radio show and podcast will devote this platform to highlighting some of them. And if you haven't already, please make sure that you visit theentrepreneurslounge.info to see part one of a new show series, Society Survivors, which I had the pleasure of co-hosting the first episode, and I encourage you to watch the first live to learn more about the reason for that show and platform. But at this time, I want to introduce the visionary behind Society Survivors. She's no stranger to the show, and she's even appeared a couple times. Please help me welcome the amazing Amazon, Mrs. Saudia White. Saudia, how are you doing today?
Well, hey, hello, Alicia. Joy.
Hello, hello.
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me back as your co-host. I'm excited to be on again amidst all
Absolutely.
Of the COVID-19 drama, if you will.
Yes. And, you know, at times like this, we try to encourage people to keep up their spirits and focus on the positive. But the fact is that there are some real issues that are plaguing us all. There's been a disruption. There's things that, you know, we have to adjust with our families and ourselves for the sake of our well-being. But one of the things we can't do is forget or ignore those in our community. And as we talked about yesterday on Society Survivors, there are some populations that, you know, they're not getting news coverage, and they're just as important, they're just as vital, but maybe because it's not personal to you, you just haven't thought of them. So today, I want you to go ahead and tell our listeners who is our featured guest expert for this show.
Oh, wow. This show right here and our featured guest. So let me just give you a little bit about who she is. Sanu Jain is currently the Executive Director of Transitions Family Violence Services, a 501c3 in Hampton, Virginia, serving victims of intimate partner violence. Her focus has been engaging the community in Transitions' mission to build healthy families on the Virginia Peninsula. She speaks with communities throughout the seven cities and partners with other organizations, knowing that only teamwork, and I'll say that again, teamwork makes the dream work. She spends time listening to the concerns of individuals and families to identify strengths and areas of improvement for service coordination. She is also working on changing systemic policies and procedures with community partners on the Virginia Peninsula to address the needs of those experiencing abuse. Sanu has been invited on several occasions to represent her district for state and national legislation to support increased funding and or policy change to benefit survivors of abuse. Awesome.
And you know, that is. That just shows you the gravity of it. You know, you have to understand what the issues are, but then you have to go a step further with changing the policies and laws. And that's something we were talking about on the show yesterday. So we definitely want to make sure we welcome her into the studio and take advantage of her expertise, because it's so needed at this time. So without further ado, I want you to give an applause and welcome to the Entrepreneurs Lounge Show, Miss Sunu James.
Good afternoon,
ladies. And
Sunu,
how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when me and Saudi were talking back and forth, there are just like so many questions. It's hard to even formulate the questions for this, you know, it's just so much. So we have some questions we want to ask you, but we're both just looking forward to this discussion because there's, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You really don't.
Absolutely.
So we thank you for taking this time because I imagine at this time of crisis, your office, your organization must just be extremely, extremely busy.
We are. We're busy answering crisis calls for families that continue to need supplies, those that are attempting to exit unhealthy relationships before any other mandates to stay in place. And so we are doing our best to, work through all those crisis calls and get survivors the supplies and things that they need.
Wow. Well, you know, yesterday on our Society Survivor Show, Saudi and I were sharing some information from the CDC and UNICEF, and they were discussing the projected increase of child abuse and domestic violence during coronavirus. We shared some of the research on that population and how prior to the virus and now after the virus was an increased problem. But you are the executive director of Transition Family Violence Center. So you're firsthand there. You know, we like to say boots on ground, so you know the problem better than most. So how has the coronavirus, just the restrictions and, state mandates affected your organization and its operation?
So it's been it's impacted us tremendously. Last week, we made the hard decision to move our staff to working remotely. Our staff are the work, right? They are the ones that are, consoling our survivors, that are helping our survivors explore what their options are, accompanying them to places that they may be fearful, like court, or to continue benefits or to look for a new place. And so our people are the work. And we made the tough decision last week, given the number of staff members that we have and the mandate on social distancing, to have them work remotely, which was completely unorthodox for us. It doesn't even feel like the advocacy that we're used to providing. And so that was the first impact of the mandate. Now, as we see, Governor Northam's latest executive order and what he had outlined with schools being closed until the end of the year, it has impacted us tremendously as far as knowing that we have children that, going to school was their exit out of that abusive home. Going to school was an opportunity for teachers and faculty members to recognize that something was going on, or this child, is experiencing something that is hurting them. And so just having that community not available to our most vulnerable population, children, is an impact as well. On top of the fact that we have advocates that are also parents that are, juggling, caring for their children as well as still providing a need for those that are fleeing or attempting to flee an abusive relationship or need supportive services at the time. So that has been a struggle there. We also see that the non-essential businesses have been told that they need to close. We consider ourselves an essential service to the community, and so our advocates have agreed that they will continue to do what is necessary to support survivors in our community, to let them know they have options, and to assist those to get out and to a safe place. So we are equipping them with information and documentation in the event that they need to show that to law enforcement or anyone else that is questioning why they are out and about, so that they can continue doing their work and continuing to drop off supplies and items. Also, as an organization and just our operations, we've really had to rely on technology and have had to push ourselves in engaging certain platforms that we're not used to because we are used to the in-person. So we went through that learning curve very quickly. We had to suspend our support groups. However, we are continuing to do counseling sessions via teleconference. We are continuing to communicate with survivors about their needs and, communicating with each other via web as well. So it has significantly impacted our operations. We're concerned about the number of beds that we have and if we will continue to be able to take in all those that have a need. So, yes, it's significantly impacted our operation, but the one thing I will say is that we have a resilient staff, just like we have resilient survivors, and we are adjusting and adapting to this unfortunate new norm and doing our best.
Now, I want to ask you a question about that because, you know, there were a lot of places because of the 10 or less that, you know, we hear they have to have the population leave. So how are you able to provide, certain services like that, as well as when you said you use technology? I think this has shown us more than anything about businesses and people being really equipped with technology. But how does that allow you to continue to communicate with the survivors and not alert their abuser?
Absolutely. So I'll say for some of our sheltered operations, we operate scattered sites. So typically we have capacity to put maybe two families in a unit. At this time, we are just putting one family per unit, and those are scattered throughout the peninsula at undisclosed locations. And so that's the way that we're able to abide by that 10-person mandate. As far as contacting survivors that may still be in potentially dangerous situations, they are calling us from places where they're able to get Wi-Fi. They are calling us from hospitals. They're calling us from their places of employment. We are doing our best to also get out some communication that there is a text line that's also available through our state coalition that people can text if they cannot make a phone call and still being able to be connected to the services that we provide. I think it's important that right now as a community, sometimes we think about, domestic violence is this person's business. It has nothing to do with me. And, if you have a neighbor or a coworker or even someone that is an acquaintance that you see every now and then and they don't look okay, they look like they're in distress and that they need help, I think still practicing safe social distancing and allowing resources for them to, whether that's using a phone. We've heard, some survivors, I don't have means to call you because, my cell phone has been taken away, or I don't have any additional minutes on my phone and money is being withheld. And so I think just extending that kindness and safely to say, here's my phone to call who you need to call to get the assistance that you need. And so that's what we've been hearing and how survivors have been able to get in touch. Right now, as a team, I think we are curious to see how that's going to evolve now with non-essential businesses closing. One of the first questions that we ask on our hotline is, are you safe? And sometimes, last week we received a call and the person that was harming them was there. And so we had to have a lot of casual conversation about, nothing that had to do with what we needed to know to make that person safe just to get by, that this was just a regular call to a friend. But we could pick up and we could know that something was not right. And so we went to yes and no questions. And winded up, you know, scheduling the exit for this person. But we just have to, you know, think of unconventional ways that we can have these conversations and just really use that intuition to know that someone is calling us and they're in distress right now in their environment.
Wow. Wow. It's just some of the things you don't even think about sometimes that are implications. I know, Saudia, you had some questions in this area that you wanted to ask her about.
Yes. And Sanu, you have definitely said a lot right there. That everything that you said is so vital for the communities to hear and understand that even though we're dealing with this virus, what about the viruses before the virus? Our victims of abuse, the children of those victims of abuse. It's alarming to know that they may not have a way to escape their abuser. And one of my questions to you is, I know you stated that they may not have phones. The abuser may have taken their phones. But if they had access to Wi-Fi, to a computer per se, is there a national website or a way that they can contact you through the computer and let folks know, like, I'm in a situation, and I'm not even talking about Facebook, because you don't know, this person might have access to their Facebook page or what have you, but is there a site that they can go to, a national site or a local site that will alert transition, so to speak?
Absolutely. So the Virginia Sexual and Domestic Violence Action Alliance is a resource that if you are anywhere in the state of Virginia, they can provide you with a program in your community that is able to offer you the same level of services. And so we definitely promote them as a resource. They also have a chat line as well that survivors can text when they are in distress and need assistance. We also, again, if someone is able to call, operate our 24-hour hotline. The Action Alliance also has a 24-hour hotline as well, and I can provide those numbers so individuals can use those as well as share those with their family and friends. I think that everyone at this time needs to have these numbers readily accessible as we're communicating and checking in on each other to be able to share them. So another way also on our website, we can also, you can email us, and we have seen a few requests come in that way as well, where people are emailing us in the late hours of the morning or the night and requesting for help because someone is asleep or someone is working a late shift. And that's also a way for us to find out what's the best way to communicate with them, and we're asking those questions. On both those resources and sites, there is a safe way to exit those sites for hours. There's a safe exit, so it won't even come up in your history that it was a site that you visited. And so that's another way that survivors can engage. And then also there is the national hotline, the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which is receiving calls from all over the nation. And so they're able to take the volume of calls that way, and also can do a live chat service with survivors as well in real time as you're talking to an advocate and getting the help that you need.
Yeah, that's amazing. Technology has really brought us far. So I want to know as well, the workers, your volunteers, with all these state mandates and restrictions –
due to COVID-19. How is this affecting or putting your workers and volunteers at risk? What risk are they taking to continue to provide services to victims of abuse?
Yeah, so they're risking it every time they step out of their homes, every time that we admit a family, every time that we go out to provide a much-needed supply to someone that we're sheltering or someone that's out in the community, because we just don't know. You know, with some individuals that are asymptomatic or individuals that do have symptoms, but maybe they haven't progressed or escalated. And so we have put some precautions in place for a low to no touch during our drop-offs and our distributions. And so we are leaving things at survivors' doors and, of course, scheduling the time that you know, letting them know that we're going to be there. We are working on getting them some protective gear. We know that hospitals are a priority right now and yeah, those that are first responders. However, we feel like when we get these calls for domestic violence and it's safe for us to go out, we are responding to that as well. And we need to, you know, the well-being and the safety of our staff is important as well. So, you know, of course, those staff members that are part of vulnerable populations, we have assigned them other duties so that they are not at further risk. But every time we go out, we take that chance. And I know that our advocates know that as well. And so we prepare ourselves the best way that we can. I think that we took some serious precautions with moving remotely to ensure that, you know, survivors could communicate with, advocates could communicate with survivors in a confidential way, in a secure way that did not come back to, you know, the personal lines and information of advocates. And so we are taking every precaution that we can, but this is a constant conversation that we're having at least, you know, daily and weekly. We are convening as a team to just talk about the trends and how things are changing and what we need to do to adapt to this new environment.
Wow, I'm sure that this is something that is so alarming because no one was really prepared for this. So, as I discussed on yesterday's Society Survivor Show, this isn't the first epidemic or pandemic of this nature. So what bothers me is that as a nation, we are still not prepared for this. So, Sanu, I ask you, why do you feel that we are not better prepared to handle the crisis that's happening now within your organization and dealing with our vulnerable population of abuse and child abuse during these times?
Yeah, I think we weren't prepared without a pandemic, right? So we've got a lot of different you know, social issues that are happening and impacting children, impacting single parents, impacting those that find themselves homeless, impacting those that are not making a livable wage, impacting, you know, those that are fighting for the basic need for insurance and battling the cost of being able to afford medication. I mean, these are just social issues that we have been trying to wrap our arms around without a pandemic. And so now you have a pandemic
Absolutely.
In place and it has just gone through the roof. And so I think that we are not prepared to service those. And then if I narrow the scope in just to our community, we're not prepared to accommodate the number of beds that are needed for those that find themselves homeless. And even, you know, the mandates that are put in place for us to wash our hands and exercise social distancing, you know, with some of these non-essential businesses being closed, some of those resources to those that are displaced will not be able to do those things, which means that, you know, now we're at risk of community spread if we don't, you know, provide necessary resources to that vulnerable population. Domestic violence. I spent the evening talking to some of the other programs to see where we are capacity, and we are nearly full. And so looking at what other resources and what other options can we utilize, because we're not going to say no, right? As advocates, as knowing that this is a much needed and essential service, we are going to find a way. And so we are doing that before we get to capacity, to make sure that we are not closing our doors or saying no to anyone that needs to get out of an unhealthy situation. And so, and for our children, you know, I think that now I do have some concerns about who are going to be the eyes and the ears for those children that may be experiencing violence in the home or that have needs. And so at this time, I think this is when you need community the most. Right. We are looking to our state and our federal and our local leadership to give us guidance. But this is when I think that community can rally together. And I'm not saying go out into the streets because we want to exercise social distancing. But I think that you can rally your voices on Facebook. You can rally your voices on Twitter. You can rally your voices in a community Zoom call to create solutions that leave no one behind, that allows us to really examine those that are vulnerable and what solutions can we put in place. What resources do I have that I need to share? How do I need to be attentive in my home to listen out for my neighbor if something is happening? This is when we really need to rally around the word and the concept and the feeling of community and create some solutions. And state, you know, local, state, and federal government don't always have to, you know, be a part of those solutions. They have the funding to help us and the means to do that and the resources. But sometimes, and I'm a true believer that community has everything that it needs to thrive. And I really encourage listeners to think about what do I have that I can offer to community to lessen the impact of this pandemic to vulnerable populations.
Absolutely. And this is why Alicia and I wanted to form Society Survivors, that show to give the community an opportunity to hear their voices. We are all watching the news, as we stated yesterday on yesterday's show. We all watch the news, but a lot of times we don't get a chance to weigh in. So, you know, wow, Sanu, thank you so much. This is you're just giving us a plethora of information that everyone needs to hear.
Absolutely. And I think you talk about the news. And I was having this conversation last night. We are plagued with messages of fear, messages of, you know, despair, you know, of scarcity. And I think it's important in this moment when we are forced to stop, when we are forced to care, when we are forced to really reflect and evaluate what's happening in our community, I encourage folks to get together and have visioning circles, have visioning conversations. What do you envision for your community? We know that there's power in words, that we don't have to walk around with this mindset of plague, of epidemic, of it. We understand the severity and the seriousness of it. I think that most of us do. I think some of us, you know, still need to get engaged and practice some of the mandates that are in place. But I really encourage folks to start to vision how they want to see community and how we don't find ourselves back in this place. And I think that there is something hopeful about us doing that and manifesting something very different in the now and in the future about how we will eradicate some of these social issues. I mean, it's basic justice for everyone across the board. And I think that now, while people's eyes are open and their hearts are open and they are willing to give, this is the time to really put that in the atmosphere of peace. What is that going to look like in Hampton Roads? And what is going to be our responsibility as an individual and as a collective to ensure that if this ever happens again, and Sadia, like you said, this is not the first time we've experienced a pandemic as a country and in the world, how do we make sure that the next time this happens, you know, we're prepared, our children are prepared, and our children's children are prepared, and we change the trajectory of, domestic violence, you know, child abuse, homelessness, to ensure that we don't have to worry about those issues when these things happen. We just have to worry about each other's well-being.
Yes, thank you so much, Anu. Alicia, do you have anything to add before we close?
Yes. You know, again, a lot of times the things that people advocate for are because those things are personal to them. So, you know, most of us can understand, okay, when they first talk about closing the schools for a few weeks here or, you know, wherever the listener might be, they were talking about closing the school for a couple of weeks. So people could understand, okay, we're going to need food for the kids. How are we going to get them their lesson plans? You know, those were things that people just readily understood. Then people moved, you know, for the different organizations that understood that the children, you know, some children, the only time they eat is when they go to school. So we have to do something. We have to get food together. We have to figure out, you know, how are we going to get it to the children. So there were all these things you saw community doing. It was readily understood. But I think that with this population, we're talking about abuse, when we're talking about domestic violence, as commonplace as it is in society, a lot of times people don't readily think about this unless they personally go through it or they're a survivor of it. So if you could, just paint a picture of what the average abuse, someone dealing with domestic violence or someone dealing with child abuse, the difference, what is their everyday like, for lack of better words, what is their scenario now with coronavirus? If we were fighting for why this is important, what would you say to paint a picture to get us to understand that they need help at this time just as much as someone that's looking for food or someone going through the other things that the media broadcasts but doesn't talk about this issue?
Absolutely. I think that Sadia said it when you first opened up the show about the fear, right, and the fear uh-huh. that people are experiencing in their home. And so if I had to paint the picture, the fear that we all are feeling around not knowing what we're going to hear tomorrow, about how many new cases, about the death tolls increasing, that is the fear that survivors feel every minute, every hour and every day in their home. The fear of the unknown, the fear of, is it going to be a physical explosion today? Is it going to be an emotional, abusive and rocky, manipulative night? Is it going to be a night where, you know, the children are going to see things that no child ever has to see or that they have to hear? Is this going to be the night that, you know, someone is going to be making the phone call and I won't be here? I think that it's important as we talk about and not to take away from other causes. We know that people need food and we know that people need, supplies. That
right.
Once you give those things, that's where it ends. But with the domestic violence, it is not as easy to get through the door to get those things. First, we have to build trust. And a rapport with someone that's experiencing abuse to even open the door to let us in. Because there are, I mean, as we talk about social distancing and people staying behind closed doors, there are things that we don't know. We can only imagine what's happening. And so it's not as easy for someone to reach out to say, this is what I need. And sometimes when you've gone through this cycle of violence, whether, you know, this partner is being abusive or you grew up in a home where there's abuse or you've got complex trauma where you're dealing with, you know, I know Sadia yesterday on the had brought up on the show previously around, you know, child sexual abuse and some of those are early childhood experiences that can contribute to, our decisions as we get older and our inability to just walk away. that is what survivors are dealing with, and that is what our children are dealing with. And also, as we know that all eyes are on this pandemic, and we are all thinking about is, you know, do I make the decision to, you know, do I need this extra can, or maybe somebody else needs it, or do I go to the hospital for this, or, you know, everyone is focused on this pandemic. We also have to let survivors know, and I think that I appreciate what you ladies are doing, getting the word out there that although this pandemic is happening, we understand you're dealing with a personal pandemic, and it's just as important, and it's just as valuable, and we are here to support and help you in any way that we can, and you're not alone, and it's not going to be a burden on top of everything else. And so I think it's important that people understand what we are feeling in this season. This is what survivors feel every day when there's not a pandemic. And some of the things that we take for granted, and I've heard directly from survivors, you know, I'm debating whether internet is something, internet is a luxury. And for some of us, internet is a basic everyday part of our life. It's something that it's a tool that we use. And so thinking about some of just the basic things that we take for granted, not having internet, not having access to your car keys and being able to go to the grocery store because your partner is withholding them, or not even having transportation to go out and go get those things, or to go out and go get your child's packet from their school. Those things of being able to call, I don't have a phone, or I've been borrowing someone else's phone. The other basic necessity of just staying connected to what is happening in the news, being able to know that if there is, you know, another mandate put in place, that I'm going to be aware of what's happening. And so, also just the financial implications, that if the person that is hurting me is the breadwinner, and I depend on them for finances, that person withholding money from me to be able to get what I need or get medication. We're also in allergy season as well. There are other things, and we've been talking about that as an agency. We need to put together medical kits for those that maybe don't have coronavirus but might have a common cold, or may be experiencing the flu, or may have allergies. What is our responsibility to get them those resources as well if someone is withholding their ability to care for themselves at home? And so these are things that are running through the mind of a survivor daily, that sometimes we have the luxury to say, I don't want to think about that today. I'll think about that tomorrow. Right. Survivors are constantly thinking about these, and this is why we refer to them as survivors and not victims, because they are surviving each and every day like the rest of us now in this pandemic.
You know what, Sanu, I love that you said personal pandemic, that they go through personal pandemics on a daily basis. We may face a pandemic every couple of years or so, but a survivor, a victim, they go through personal pandemics. And I think sometimes as community we forget, you know, there are, those problems exist right there in our backyard. Sanu, before we close, please share with the listeners ways in which they can support transitions during these perilous times.
Absolutely. So we are updating our website and our Facebook page regularly, as we have families that are expressing their needs. And so those have increased as well. And so please look on our Facebook page, Transitions Family Violence Services, and at our website, transitionsfvs.org, for things that we need. We need cleaning supplies. We need non-perishable foods. We need items for medical kits, such as cough medicine, Pedialyte, thermometers if you can get your hands on them, allergy medicine, just those over-the-counter medications that we all have. We need food kits. We need toilet paper. We need just those basic household items that we can deliver to families. Another few items that came on a list prior to me jumping on the call were snacks and those quick pop-top meals for our kids that are going to be home. We want healthy meals and healthy snacks, and we're working with our families to see if we can continue to keep our children, especially our young children, on their normal routine. And so things that support families in being able to care for their children and have the things that they need. I think that also, you know, gift cards are extremely helpful as well for Uber and Lyft, and gift cards that can support survivors that need to add minutes for their phone to continue their counseling sessions, or just to stay in communication with us about what they need or with their friends and family. And I think that that's going to be really important in this moment, and we're going to be sharing a resource that was created by the Washington State Coalition on how friends and family can advocate for those that are experiencing abuse and things that you can do for your loved ones to help them during this time. We also need financial contributions to help us with transportation costs, as we know that we've limited, you know, gatherings of over 10 and we are exercising social distance. How do we allow survivors to get the transportation to and from work if they have to continue to work in food service industries that are delivering or in other businesses that have been deemed essential so that they can keep money coming in their homes and not find themselves having to go back to an abusive situation because of financial means? We invite community to co-create solutions for us around child care. I know that the governor did encourage child care providers and stated his emphasis on the necessity for that service, especially with those that are working in the medical industry. So we invite community to think about affordable, safe options for children or how we can support our child care facilities to open their doors to allow individuals that we deem essential businesses to continue to operate. And so right now, those are our needs, but please follow our Facebook page and look at our website for more information on how you can support us as our needs are changing every couple of days, as we are survivor-focused and survivor-driven in our efforts.
Absolutely. Well, Sanu Jane, thank you so much. You don't know how you have enlightened us. I didn't even think about, I mean, Alicia, did you think about that gift card?
Absolutely not.
I didn't even think about that. So thank you so much for enlightening us and sharing with us on today.
Yeah.
We really hope that the awareness will continue so that those who really need help and may not be on the forefront of everyone's mind can get the vital help and support that they need. And it's because of people like you who have boots on the ground and you're fighting the constant battle and continuously. That's what the community needs to see. They need to hear this. They need to know. So, Sanu Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. I appreciate what you all are doing. And, you know, I know that we are just reflections of our community, right, and what is being done. So I appreciate you creating space to uplift the voices of survivors and allowing me to share the things that we are hearing and the things that we are seeing, and, you know, putting that call to action out the community to get involved. So I just am so appreciative of your platform and what you are trying to do. So thank you so very much.
No, thank you. We're just appreciative of the work that you and all your volunteers and staff are doing. Because as Saadia said, it's the boots on the ground. It's the things we don't even think of. Which is why we need experts like you to have this space so that we're aware of it and then we can actually do something about it. So our prayers are with you, and we just thank you so much for sharing this information.
Thank you.
Did you even think about some of these things before we had her on?
No. Some of it, yes. But
Tylenol and allergy medicine, thermometers, I mean, I wouldn't have even thought.
Right, when she said the Tylenol, the allergy medicine, I was like, wow, I didn't even think about that. Like, I was thinking more on the lines of, okay, diapers, food, and non-perishable items, maybe soap, toothpaste, toothbrushes, things of that nature.
Exactly.
I wasn't deodorant. You know, I was thinking about things like that.
Uh-huh.
It's allergy season now. So those, they may suffer from allergies. The children may suffer from allergies. I mean, wow. So she really dropped a lot of nuggets on us today. And I'm prayerful that when the listeners tune in, they'll take this and, wow, they'll really embrace it and say, okay, these are some of the things that I can do to be a part of, a vital help and support of this situation here. And not turn a blind eye. Because when she said gift card, that blew me. I was like, oh, man, yeah, gift card, Uber. Because how are they going to get away? What if they don't have any money? So you give them a gift card, and they can, you know, use that to, you know, to call, make their phone calls if they have a paid per phone or what have you.
Right.
These things that we don't think about. You know, because it's not touching us.
Exactly.
And when she said no pandemic, Alicia, that blew me away. Wow.
If you think about, I love that analogy she gave, the fear and things we're feeling with the coronavirus, they feel it every day, every single day.
Yeah.
That's really saying something. So, you know, for people out there that are listening, you know, you heard the needs, you heard the things. Of course, we want you to share this episode, but don't just share it, especially in your families. If you could sit down and talk about, I have a game plan. And like with most nonprofits, you know, if you don't physically do something, you know, some people want to volunteer time, and we know with coronavirus, you can't really do that in the same way. You know, donations always help. Donations always help. You know, no matter how small, of course, you want a big, the bigger the better, but even if it's a small donation, you know, sometimes if you think about, you and 10 people got together and each person donated $25, donated $20. You know, a lot of us, there's expenses we don't have because we're stuck in the house if we're, you know, obeying the measures. You're not, you know, if you love Starbucks and you went to Starbucks every day, you're not spending money like that anymore because you're not there. So you can do causes like this and give money where it's really needed. Wow. That's a lot. But
it was a lot. And I pray that we have her back on as a follow-up to see if this show has enlightened anyone, just to see where they're at, you know, just for a follow-up conversation. Like, wow. I'm still with
and
my...
And, you know, things are going to change. Things
Absolutely.
Are definitely going to change one way or another the longer we're in this. So, yeah, it always calls for a deeper discussion and another checkpoint to see where we are exactly. And, you know, maybe there's some new considerations if there's different mandates and things like that. But, you know, here in Virginia, we just had it where, for our listeners out there, we just had it yesterday where they said they're closing the schools down for the rest of the school year. You know, we were at first shut down for about 2 weeks, and now it's going to be to the total end of the school year. So, you know, as crisis change, and of course we know we have to do certain preventative things for the betterment of everyone, but these are the implications. These are the things that, unless this is your personal experience or, you know, this is the population that you survive, you just don't think about. And definitely if you don't work in it, there's even the other things. You may have survived it, but you just don't see or think about. what we want to do is encourage and invite the listeners to continue to follow us at theentrepreneurslounge.info. You can catch all the replays. If you came into this episode late, then, of course, you can go and play it back from the beginning, as well as get special updates and information. But I am going to end on this motivational thought. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. That's from the King James Version of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 through 9. And that gives you the assurance, if you put it in perspective, we will make it through this, challenges and all. But until then, prepare, pray, and know that help is on the way. We bid you prayers and ask that you would keep this nation lifted, do what only you can do, and let a higher power do what only he can do. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Entrepreneur's Lounge, where we expose the myths of entrepreneurship and release the weight of it all. Real people, real issues, and real talk with expert solutions. Make sure you stay tuned to our Facebook page and thejoyguru.net for show updates, announcements, and to learn how you can be a guest on our show.